Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Independent bookstores are more than stores with books. Indies bring communities together to read, listen, gather, and discover new worlds. Today, we're talking with Julie Schultz, the treasurer of This House of Books, a community-owned cooperative bookstore in Billings. The topic is, what is This House of Books, how it came to be, and what makes it special?
Julie, welcome to Resounds. I had to question treasurer because I sort of think of you as like the godfather of This House of Books. You're the one I always communicate with.
I'm the liaison between the board and the everyday operations. So that's sort of in addition to my treasurer duties.
Well, we're happy to have you here. We were just chatting earlier. I thought we did an interview at This House of Books, but it was 8 years ago? Tell us about when the bookstore first started.
So this will be our 10th year in business. In October, we will be celebrating officially 10 years of our doors being open in downtown Billings. So 2016 was the beginning of it all. I haven't been involved since the beginning. I moved to Billings in 2016 and discovered the bookstore immediately upon moving here. And it saved me in a lot of ways. And so I eventually showed up so often that they decided I should just be on the board.
So this name, This House of Books, an obvious reference to one of our state's most famous authors, Ivan Doig. I still have his phone number. Now, I know that he's died, but I remember Ivan Doig coming to Billings and he wrote his phone number on a postcard.
That's amazing.
That as a side note. What is the connection from This House of Sky to This House of Books?
So, as you said, Ivan Doig is one of the godfathers of Montana literature. And when the people who were starting the bookstore were trying to come up with an appropriate name for this new endeavor, they came up with riffing off of This House of Sky. And Ivan Doig had just recently passed away. And so they reached out to Carol, his widow, and asked, would it be okay if, in honor of Ivan Doig and This House of Sky, if we could name the bookstore This House of Books? And for a lot of people, that resonates, and they know what it's referencing. But I do have to constantly correct people who want it to be House of Books or The House of Books. And no, it's This House of Books because it's This House of Sky.
And I have been to Ivan Doig's house. It's actually owned by some friends of mine, which I realized when I was in that house, there are windows all the way around. It's on a hill outside of White Sulphur Springs, and you see
the sky.
All the way around. I love the title of This House of Books, and I think it's a wonderful reference. So the origins, that was 10 years ago, and it was really a community effort. I think I was one of the early investors in it.
I
was
running
writers. But tell us about the initial people. Was it readers, authors? Who sort of dreamed up this whole idea of having a community bookstore?
So Thomas Books, the longtime indie bookstore downtown, had closed in 2012. And so I think it was mostly writers who were looking for a full-service indie, because, of course, we have Barjons. We have a few books more for used books. But they wanted this group of local writers wanted a place where they could showcase their work, showcase local and regional authors especially, and get people together to talk about literary, fun, amazing things.
And Susan Thomas, I love Thomas Books. Yeah. Okay, I have to get back to Ivan Doig. When he read at the Alberta Bear Theater, I think it was maybe one of the very first book festivals in 2009 or something. Susan said they made more money selling books of Ivan Doig. Said they had the entire month.
I believe it.
He's such a popular writer. So it is interesting when you think of university towns, Bozeman and Missoula, having big independent bookstores. And Billings doesn't even have a bookstore at some of the colleges anymore.
Right.
What is the role of a community bookstore?
Well, that's one of those questions that I could go on and write an entire tome about. But I think the main thing is convening. So offering a community space. You hear a lot about third spaces. So first space is home, second space is work. And people are increasingly looking for these third spaces to gather, to talk about, like with like-minded people about things that they share interests in. And so a community bookstore, in addition to being a place where local and regional authors can have a place to showcase their work, it's a place for the community to gather and talk about that work, but also talk about other things that might be on their mind, just to have a space for that.
And as a nonprofit, you have a board of directors?
We actually aren't a nonprofit. We're a cooperative, which is still a for-profit model.
And it's
a very common misunderstanding. So it's a lot of people think that cooperative means nonprofit.
Not the case.
So
you do have a board of directors?
We do, because it's the cooperative model. So there are about 700 owners, and trying to get 700 owners all together to make decisions would be like herding cats. And so instead we have a board of seven people who are the ones who make the big decisions. And then once a year we have an annual meeting and the entire membership is invited and can vote on things like who's on the board.
I would think that board does sort of management financial plans as opposed to book ordering. Everybody has like, okay, I need that book or that book. But the day-to-day management is completely separate from what
Correct.
The board does.
Correct, except for me as the board liaison between what the board is deciding on and what the day-to-day operations are. So I actually do almost all the ordering.
How do you decide? There's a lot of books out there.
That's one of my favorite questions. Yeah, and every indie bookstore has a little bit different process. I think going back to what we were talking about with community, a lot of the choices that we make for what goes on the shelves are informed by what's going on in the community. So we love Art House, and they often are playing movies that are based on books. So we'll make sure we have the books that are related to that. The YAM, the Yellowstone Art Museum, will have displays that are related to literature in some way. So we'll try and highlight that. Right now, Nova is doing a youth production of Snow White. And so we have a whole display of fairy tale related books. So it's a lot of it is related to that. We also have about 200 member owners who are also authors. So we have their work on the shelves. And then we have a very strong, regular group of customers who let us know, oh, this book is coming out in 7 months and I'm going to pre-order it from you. And that gives us a little bit of a hint to what other people in the community might be interested in as well.
Julie, I'm curious. I'm on the board at the Art House, and did you sell books of Frankenstein, and are you selling books of Wuthering Heights?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. And we had displays dedicated to both productions as well. And so we had a book that was Frankenstein, but annotated for engineers and scientists. And that was a popular one when the movie was out at Art House.
Oh, how fun. What a great tie. What about the history of sound?
Good question. I don't think
no one went to the movie. It was my favorite. It was my favorite. When we had a board meeting, and we were all talking about what films were popular. Obviously, Wicked and Superman and all those things. But some literary books were actually titles of films. And at the very bottom of the list, the films that nobody went to, I had seen all of them. most of them were based on books, and the history of sound. 40 people went to it over the course of a week. Not a good sign.
I don't remember us getting any inquiries about the book.
Oh. Okay, listeners,
The History of Sound.
Listeners, The History of Sound. Put your order in at This House of Books. So how does the idea of community ownership show up in just everyday decisions or your decisions in terms of buying books and ordering books?
So first of all, what's going on in the community like we talked about, but also just being aware of what people are interested in Billings, and then not just Billings generally, but also specifically the people who self-select to come into an indie bookstore in the downtown core area of what is traditionally a fairly industrial city on the High Plains. So there's a particular kind of book that ends up appealing to that audience. We've seen it shift a little bit over the course of the 10 years. So when I first got involved with the bookstore, we would get a lot of requests for Lewis and Clark books, or people were always wanting to know about Battle at the Little Bighorn. And there's been we still get those requests, but there's been less of that and more of, can you find books for me about matriarchal societies? That's a recent request. And so we didn't have anything specific about that on the shelf, but we did a little bit of research to find for this customer books that might be related to that, either that are on the shelves or that we can get for them.
That's so interesting. I mean, Crow culture.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and a lot of indigenous cultures as well. So, you know, we have my grandmother's grandchild, some of the Alma Snell books, and so there's things that incorporate that, even if it's not in the title of the book.
Julie, I'm curious, do you keep track or do you have a sense of how many books are bought by local people and how many are purchased by visitors or travelers to Billings?
And we don't have great statistics on that, so it's more anecdotal, just looking at when the tourists come to town, which tends to be summer, although I will say that because we are downtown and a lot of the conferences happen downtown, we see a lot of business travelers who will come. And we have some regulars who come to town at least once or twice a year for business, and we see them every single time they're here. We love the flight attendants who the airlines put them up at downtown hotels, and we see them on their day off between shifts. And
that is such a great story. Yet they're stuck in Billings for a day or two between shifts, and you're supplying the books.
Right. And so I think that's been part of the shift away from Lewis and Clark and Little Bighorn and toward a whole bunch of other kinds of books being requested.
The other event that I recall that you and I worked on was with Steve Ranella.
Oh, yes.
And he was a friend of mine. I knew he had a book coming out, a sort of family-oriented kid book. And I just called him and said, do you want to do a reading in Billings? And he said, yeah, let's do it at the Alberta Bear Theater. And I sort of laughed and thought, well, you're a little precocious to think that you're going to fill the theater with the, well,
he did.
It sold out, absolutely. And he put together such a fun program where when you bought a ticket, you weren't really buying a ticket. You were buying a book.
Exactly.
So everyone that came in the door got a book.
He's wonderful to deal with, and he really loves indie bookstores. And so afterwards, he sent us donuts a couple days later just to thank us, which is a really amazing gesture for someone with a national platform like he has.
You also have a very close relationship with the High Plains Book Awards. Tell us a little bit about the High Plains Book Awards and then how you're involved or how the bookstore is involved.
So the High Plains International Book Awards, the international just got added last year to recognize that Canada is very much a part of the awards and something that sets High Plains apart from other book awards. So it's been 18 years or thereabouts, and this House of Books has become the official bookseller for the awards, which means that every October when the finalists gather in Billings, we are there for the panels in the afternoon at the library and then again at the awards ceremony in the evening at MSUB to sell the books of the authors who are the finalists in every one of the 13 categories.
For so many Canadian writers, they aren't in American bookstores. Have you had success selling books by authors outside of the state of Montana that are sort of new regional writers?
Well, with the High Plains Book Awards especially, we're exposed to the Canadian writers. And so there are some publishers that we know about because of the High Plains Book Awards that we then order from regularly aside from the High Plains titles. And I will say that some of those titles end up on the shelves in a way that garners interest from people who are passing through, from tourists, even from some of our regulars who are glad to see something different on our shelves. So I do think that the Canadian impact from the High Plains Book Awards is important for our shelf selection all year round.
One of the things I know about the High Plains Book Awards is that the Canadians have kind of dominated young adult fiction and a lot of women fiction. Some of the finalists, two or three of them are Canadians. And I think that's so fascinating. Yeah. Because the process of selecting the finalists is community readers.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So it's another thing that sets the High Plains International Book Awards apart from other award processes, because the community selects who goes on to the final round, rather than booksellers in some cases or other authors in some cases. So these are books that the average reader thinks are worth passing along. And it happens across all the categories. And so you see books that you might not have seen reviewed in the New York Times or in Kirkus Reviews. These are things that are resonating with everyday people.
One of the other things that you do, I love, is putting out the best-selling books at the end of the year in
yes.
January. I think here
yes.
are the highest-selling books. Who made that list this last year?
So we divide it across three categories. We have adult fiction, adult nonfiction, and then the young adult category. Especially in the young reader category, the High Plains finalists dominate. And that can be true in fiction and nonfiction as well. We see a lot of local and regional authors ending up on the list. So Gianna Cromley last year had a great book called American Mythology, and that made our bestseller list for adult fiction. We have another local author who just came out with her debut mystery novel, Murder in the Crazy Mountains, and that was our number one fiction bestseller. Our number one nonfiction bestseller was On Tyranny, the regular version, and then the graphic novel version also made the top 10 list separately. The Crazies by Amy Gamerman made our top 10 in adult nonfiction. And then we had two poetry collections that we put those in adult nonfiction, and Shirley Steele's second book and Tammy Holland's new book both made the adult nonfiction top 10 bestsellers list. I have a soft spot for poetry, so I always love seeing poetry books make a top 10 bestseller list, which is not something you often see.
One of the things that makes this House of Books special is also the fact it's not just a bookstore. You have all kinds of events going on. Tell us about some of the events that have happened or are about to happen, the nature of those events.
Well, we like to have a variety. So we have a regular writers group that meets on Tuesdays from 6 to 7:30. And it's not a critique group. They meet for accountability more than anything. They talk for half an hour and then they write solidly, silently for an hour. We have a regular open mic poetry night on the third Friday of every month that draws a pretty regular group of people, and then new people come every time. And we have, of course, regular meetings with authors who are talking about their work, whether it's new work or work that they've talked about many times before. We have panel discussions. We have writing workshops. We have story times for kids. When Giano Cromley's American Mythology book came out, we celebrated National Sasquatch Awareness Day, which I believe is on October 20th each year.
You don't do that every year?
Well, this was our first time doing it because of Giano's book, but it was really fun, and so we might do it again. That might become an annual thing.
You also have a working relationship with the library. I'm on the group that hosts One Book Billings, and we read 5 or 6 books during the year, and the library orders those books in. But when they have events, when those readers are there, you actually sell the books for the library, because the library doesn't sell books, right?
Right, right. Yeah, so we have a very good relationship both with the library and with both colleges, Rocky Mountain and MSUB. And so I think one of the upcoming authors is Bryce Andrews for One Book Billings, but he's also doing a reading at Rocky Mountain College when he's here for One Book Billings. So we will be selling the books at his event at Rocky Mountain College.
I'm having dinner with him. Do you want to bring some books over? Oh, is there anybody more wonderful than Bryce?
Oh, he's so great. He was on a panel for High Plains a couple of years ago when his latest book, Holding Fire, was a finalist. And we got into a big discussion about does listening to an audiobook count as reading? And we all came down very much agreeing that whether you read it as an ebook or an audiobook or a physical book, it all counts as reading. But he had the very good point. And he's a big audiobook fan because he spends a lot of time on a tractor or on a horse.
And raising raspberries.
Right, right. but he had the very good point that there's a difference in agency between an audiobook, which just keeps going whether you are involved in that or not, and a physical book where you as the reader have to make a choice in every sentence to keep reading after that sentence. It doesn't just keep going without you.
I'm making another confession here, Julie. As I get older, my eyes are not as good as they used to be, and I read a lot of books on my Kindle. The
yes.
other thing that I love, I've not got into audiobooks. It's distracting for me. I don't know.
My mind wanders.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Are all like, oh, maybe I should go iron a shirt or wash dishes or do something other than. But when you're reading, you just need to read. My favorite thing on the Kindle is you can look up words.
Yes. Yeah, you can expand the font and you can look things up. You can highlight without destroying the book.
Has that affected book sales?
So I'll just give a pitch for doing ebooks via bookshop rather than Kindle. Because audiobooks, ebooks, physical books, you have 3 different ways to read a book now. And we have seen people reading in all 3 formats. So they get the ebook because it's easy to hold and they can expand the font and they can make notes. They get the audiobook for their commute or because they're driving kids all around. And then they get the physical book as well because they just like it on their shelf. And especially recently, the publishing industry has gotten very involved in making books art objects. So they have gorgeous covers with gilded inlay, and they have sprayed or stenciled edges that show a scene from the book, and they have end papers that are just pieces of art in and of themselves. So people are wanting to buy the physical book because it looks nice. And
I will often read a book on Kindle and then buy the book to put it in my library to say that I've read it, because nobody knows the books I've been reading on my Kindle. And I want to support the writers.
Yes, absolutely.
Particularly regional writers. I would be horrified if Joe Wilkins came to my house and didn't see all of his books.
Yeah.
All of his books there. Is Montana special in terms of writers? I mean, I have a bias. What are your thoughts?
I mean, obviously, I share what I believe your bias to be, which is that, yes, there's something special about Montana. I think it's partially that we have the U of M MFA program that goes back a lot of decades and has been a petri dish for a lot of amazing writers, some of whom have stayed in Montana, some of whom haven't, but still have a piece of Montana that they include in their work. So that's special. I think also we have this house of sky that surrounds us all the time, and that is something that inspires a lot of people to write about it, or to just write, period, even if it has nothing to do with the landscape, what it is they're writing. I think having long winters that are cold, although you wouldn't know that this year, but I think generally it means, okay, we have to, as a populace, find things to do that are indoor things. Being a traditionally agricultural state also means that you need to find things to do in the winter, and that reading and writing are both activities that lend themselves to the cold and the dark.
So you are the treasurer. I have a financial question. How is the bookstore doing, and how do you see the future of bookstores?
So we had an amazing year in 2025, which makes my stress level a lot better than it was in the early years of the bookstore. And that's emblematic of what's going on in the book industry generally. So we saw a peak shortly after the pandemic started, when everyone wanted to read. And so there was a really good year, and we haven't quite gotten back to that peak. But in general, book sales are ticking up every year, and this includes across all the channels we talked about: audiobooks, physical books, ebooks, and people are still buying physical books. And you hear a lot of hand wringing about the decline of reading generally, and the statistics do indicate that fewer people are reading, but the people who are still reading are reading more. I think that's good for bookstores, especially indie bookstores.
I think the three of us are in that cup.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Julie Schultz, treasurer of this House of Books, thank you for joining us on Resounds. We will have information about the bookstore on our website. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.